You have reached the Every Little Thing helpline. Please leave your burning question regarding sporting rituals after the tone. Include your name and the best.
Up first, ELT listener Leslie called about the origin story of a custom that millions of people do every Sunday.
Imagine thousands of people in a stadium. It looks like the whole stadium is trying to communicate something to someone.
Drivers are cinched up, fans are on their feet as we go trackside.
Area, you knew at some point we were going to see a wave.
Let's dive in.
Hi, Flora.
First of all, do you like want to stand up and sit down quickly just to get revved up?
I might just put my hands up, but stay seated.
Okay, so you called us about the wave.
Yes, I did.
Why?
It just came up because I saw it about a month ago when I attended a Dodger game here in LA, and I definitely remember leaning over to my husband when it was occurring and saying, isn't this just the strangest thing to do? Like, if we were aliens hovering over the stadium and watching this occur, what would we think that is?
So what do you want to know about it?
I would love to know who's responsible for making this a thing.
You don't think this just spontaneously happened?
If it did, wow. But I don't know. I feel like someone had to come up with this.
Leslie, you're onto something. There is a mastermind behind the wave.
I want to meet this guy. It had to be someone like a cheerleader, like super like perky.
I don't think you can imagine perk on this level.
Can you hear me? That's my drum.
Leslie, allow me to introduce you to George.
This is Crazy George here.
Crazy with a K.
We're ready. Roll!
Oh, my God. He sounds like he's been either yelling at crowds for 50 years or smoking every day for 50 years.
He literally has yelled at crowds for 50 years.
I started cheering at San Jose State 50 years ago, and I've been a professional cheerleader for over 44 years. And that's
George has been hired by lots of different teams to be a stadium hype person, to get fans amped up.
I've worked over 100 pro teams. I was full-time for 4 years with the Minnesota Vikings, the Kansas City Chiefs, the Oakland A's. Lots and lots of teams have hired me.
There are competing claims for the original waiver, but the first documented wave at a pro game was sparked by Crazy George.
But how did this wave even start then?
Well, like a lot of innovators, Crazy George relied on instinct.
I never think about what I do. It was just having fun.
You never think about what you do?
Never.
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 Okay.
Crazy George didn't just dream up the wave in one night. It swelled from a ripple that started 50 years ago at San Jose State.
I was a student at the time, and I was elected as head cheerleader.
By the way, this is a 1960s recording of the San Jose State marching band.
One of my cheers that I invented is I had three sections of students. So I had one section stand up and yell San, then the next section would stand up and sit down and yell Jose, and then State, so it would be San Jose State.
So three sections popping up one after the next. The tiniest ripple.
And that was in the back of my mind for years, but I never thought about changing it.
So let's fast forward through George's career. 10 years later, George has gone pro.
And then I get to a Colorado Rockies. I was the cheerleader in Colorado.
And he decides to bust out the San Jose trick for the Colorado Rockies hockey team.
I was doing Go Rockies Go, the three sections.
He tells the sections to stand up and yell go, one after the next.
So I pointed and they went go, and the next section, go, go, go.
And then something unexpected happened.
It just kept going.
It didn't stop with those three sections. It swept around the stadium. It had its own natural momentum.
Oh, yeah. They were standing up. They were throwing their bodies up. They were loving it.
Here, in this arena, the ripple becomes a little wave, And George goes on to practice that little wave at a bunch of smaller venues.
I guess the big question is, when did he graduate from a microwave to a macro wave?
Okay, the day the wave was born, that was October 15th, 1981, at an Oakland A's New York Yankee playoff game.
Which was televised.
It is 72 degrees here in Oakland, a good crowd on hand. And in the background I hear, I'm sure you hear the Oakland fans reacting to their Oakland A's. They love them here. The Yankees want to nail it.
So, Leslie, we can watch the birth of the wave together. I'm sending you a video.
Okay, it's plain.
Any individual person standing out to you in the crowd?
No way.
Yes, that guy in the short shorts dancing on top of the dugout is Crazy George almost 40 years ago. George had been hired by the Oakland A's to rev up the crowd.
But it should be a big banner year in this area. These fans are really enthusiastic. And I'll tell you, the way it's been going, it's like it's been boiling and bubbling, a Mount St. Helens feeling here where something's going to erupt.
And George knew he wanted to deploy the wave at this game, but he'd never tried it on this scale.
So I knew what I wanted, but 47,000 fans did not know what I wanted.
How would you know what to do? And it's not like this is a game of telephone, you know. It would be the ultimate game of telephone if it was, but it's not like people knew what was going on.
Yeah, exactly. How do you get tens of thousands of people to do a thing they've never seen before or even have a word for?
I have no idea.
Well, for one, you bang your drum a lot.
Because you've got to get people's attention and focus on you. And when I stand in the stands at the bottom row and I look up at everybody and I hit that drum, everybody focuses on me.
So armed with his drum, George tries to make this happen.
So I went to three sections and I said, 100% of the people in this section has to do it. You understand? And I'm screaming and yelling and threatening them and making faces.
And he says to the sections, look, if this thing dies out, I want you to boo as loud as you can.
So these three sections were ready. We started, and sure enough, it died.
Strike one.
And I said, let's start it again. The second time, it went almost halfway around.
And then it died again. Strike two.
But now the boo was so loud.
You can even hear the booing behind the announcer's voice.
And hire the man, not that guy, the guy who's in the picture before that, Billy Martin.
So George tries a third time.
Well, this time, the whole stadium figured out what I wanted.
And this guy really works it. I mean, such power he has, he just directs section by section, and you see it, it's a marvelous thing.
All three tiers were doing it in sync. All the way around. It swept behind home plate. It swept around first base. The noise it was creating. When it came around, it was like a freight train coming at us.
This crowd really reacting. Just saw one of the most amazing sights, Joe, as we looked at the mezzanine. Each section, as they said, goal got up all the way from behind home plate, completely around the stadium to the bleacher. Looked like it was orchestrated.
George remembers the wave going around six times.
Nobody ever saw anything like that in their life. It was nuts.
Now keep in mind, there's nothing happening right now. They're just entertaining themselves and doing a great job of it. They're just having fun at the old ballpark.
Wow.
It's the wave that started all waves. After this game, it caught. It popped up at a game in Seattle, then in Michigan. And a few years later, it made its international debut at the World Cup in Mexico, which is why a lot of the world calls it the Mexican Wave.
And I guess Crazy George was just the catalyst.
Yeah.
The big question is, did they actually end up winning the game?
We lost.
The Oakland A's lost.
No. Oh.
That was beyond the Wave's powers.
The Wave didn't help, but I think it was mostly the Yankees cheating so much. That's what I think.
After the break, we right some wrongs.
Thank you. Hi, this is Natalie. This is a factual correction emergency.
Hey there, this is Manuel calling from Germany with a small correction.
It's time for my favorite segment, Well Factually, where ELT listeners tell us what we got wrong and we try to make things right. So a few episodes ago, we were talking about wombats, best button biology, and we made an assumption about the taxonomy of an obscure animal. Thankfully, you guys were there to let us know there was a problem.
I was listening to your show on wombats, and you mentioned the echidna and said it was a marsupial, but echidnas are actually monotremes.
The echidna is not, in fact, a marsupial. It's a monotreme.
I want to correct you as well, so...
That last voice was Robin Beck, a biologist who did his PhD on weird Australian animals. He is here to help us sort out our marsupial monotreme mix-up. So the animal that we mistaxonomied was the echidna. For an audience not down under, what is an echidna?
So an echidna is it's a fairly large mammal, you know, a couple of pounds, I suppose. And it looks superficially a bit like a porcupine, in that it's covered in spines. But it's quite different in certain ways. If you look at its face, it has a really long, drawn-out nose or snout. It doesn't have any teeth. It has this very weak jaw. And the reason for that is because it eats mainly ants and termites, which it sort of hoovers up with a long, sticky tongue.
Hoovers up with their tongue? What should I be imagining?
So you need to imagine a really long, thin tongue, and it has this very thick, sticky saliva, and it's flicking its tongue out, and the ants and the termites get stuck into that saliva, and then it withdraws the tongue back into its mouth and then basically swallows the ants.
That's very visual.
I'm glad I can give you that mental image.
Okay, so an echidna, this porcupine-like animal with a long, sticky, hoovering tongue, has a pouch, lives in Australia, land of marsupials, but it is not a marsupial. What is it?
So echidnas are members of this group called the monotremes.
How do they fit into the animal kingdom?
Okay, so there are about 5,000 species of mammals alive today, and the vast majority, so over 95% of them, are a group called placental mammals. We then have the marsupials, which is about 300 species. And then we have this third group, this strange, mysterious group that we call the monotremes.
Why are they mysterious?
Well, because they're very, very different from the other two major groups. In many ways, they're quite primitive. And the most obvious sort of primitive feature is that they lay eggs. They're the only mammals alive today that lay eggs. They've retained this primitive feature that other mammals or other living mammals have lost.
So if monotremes are a window into past mammalhood, does that mean all ancient mammals used to lay eggs?
Well, what we can say is that if we sort of map on where we expect live birth to evolve, it seems that it just evolved on the branch leading to placentals and marsupials. So yeah, we would conclude from that that the ancestor of all mammals as a whole was egg laying.
So how'd they get their name monotreme? What does that mean?
So monotremes, the name actually is Greek, and it means single whole. And the reason for that is that, well, yes, we're going to sort of discuss some less sophisticated aspects of the biology of these organisms.
Our listeners are very used to that.
Okay, so the exit for solid and liquid waste and also for the reproductive duct is all via one single hole called a cloaca.
So besides the echidna, are there any other lucky animals named after their cloaca?
There's one other living monotreme, and that's the platypus.
I mean, while we're giving monotremes their due, is there cool stuff we should know about the platypus?
How long have you got? There's all kinds of great things. So firstly, when the first specimens were sent back to Europe, people thought it was a hoax. They saw this animal, it was looked like a mammal, it had a beaver-like tail, but it had this beak on the front, and scientists literally were there looking at the beak very, very carefully to see, you know, where were the stitches?
What?
Where someone, yeah, so they literally sort of used to cut away on the fur because they went, this is a ridiculous animal. This can't be real. You're having me on.
That's wild. So they're so weird that people thought they were a prank?
Yep. Yes, it's absolutely true. They have other weird features. So possibly the weirdest feature is that they're venomous. So they have, on the back of the ankle, they have a curved spur, like a curved spike. And that spur is connected to a poison gland. And that gland produces a poison that can be injected via the spur. And it is supposed to be extremely painful, extremely painful.
Do they kick their enemies in the shins?
So they can basically strike out with their legs, yes. It seems to be mainly actually for male platypuses fighting with each other.
Are there other venomous mammals?
So actually, although it was not fully appreciated until relatively recently, echidnas also have a spur on their ankles, and it does appear to produce poison as well.
All right, let me see if I can sum it up. So an echidna is an egg-laying, pouch-having, ant-eating, poisonous, spur-wielding, ancient tiny porcupine.
Close enough.
Correct me.
So really, if you look very, very closely, they're not really like porcupines at all.
I knew that was going to get me in trouble.
Yeah, I'm afraid porcupines are rodents, and rodents are really interesting as well. Can we do a show on rodents?
If you have a burning question, rodent related or otherwise, give us a ring, 833-RING-ELT. And in time for Halloween, we're working on a story about graves. And we want to know, what do you want written on your headstone? Maybe you're into the simple, tasteful RIP. Maybe you want something more personal. Call us with your epitaph, 833-RING-ELT.
Every Little Thing is produced by Aaron Reese, Phoebe Flanagan, Kristen Clark, Annette Heist, and Flora Lichtman, with help from Nicole Pasulka and Doug Barron. Ian Chillog and Caitlin Kenny are our consulting editors. Dara Hirsch scored and mixed this episode. I have ankle spurs too.
Goodbye.
Crazy George, you better listen to Every Little Thing or I'll slash your tires.